The topic tonight is gratitude and right understanding. It is within the context of right view in the Eightfold Path. For the end to suffering. In other words, happiness. This is the kind of happiness that feels blissful, but not euphoric. And it is sustainable, not roller coaster of emotions, like if you win a jackpot, for example. And it often can be gauged by the quality of your calm breathing. I'll begin this talk by telling you about my name and my experience with deep suffering. Then how the Dharma and meditation changed my view and understanding of reality. I learned that positive thinking with gratitude is liberating. So my intent in sharing you this story is to share my first-hand experience with suffering and how it was overcome. And perhaps it can be benefit to you too. Before I introduce my name, I want to read some interesting notes from Dear Abby, column that was just published today in time for this talk. And it says, Dear Abby, when picking a name for your child, remember that you could be yelling that name 20 times a day for the next 18 years. So make sure it's the one you like to hear. Here's another one. My husband, his brothers, fathers and nephew all go by their middle names. If anyone calls asking for him by his legal name, my husband knows he's a telemarketer. I read you one more from this excerpt. I was abused as a child and I started using my middle name instead of my first to take charge of my life. My husband's family has a tradition of the men all having the same first name and being distinguished by their middle names. It's confusing when we need a legal document process. But when possible, I always add a notation about the names my children and I answer to. So my name is Sirja Cahaya. It means sunlight in Indonesian. I introduced myself that way in the U.S. to make it easier for people to read my name. Where I came from, it's pronounced as Surya, Cahaya, as in Indian Sanskrit. If it makes it easier, you can call me Sergio, Serge, like the electricity. Some call me Hank. Actually, I was born with the name Henry. My dad changed my name when I was about 10, as required during the war in Indonesia. I wonder if he named it after his favorite restaurant. It did not serve the purpose to make me less Chinese. To destroy the Chinese culture in an anti-communist campaign orchestrated by the CIA for regime change, as noted in the Washington Post a few years ago under Freedom of Information Act. During the war in 1965, the new Indonesian government forbade anything Chinese. No New Year's parade, those lion dances, no more. No Chinese publications, all newspapers were shut down, all books were burned. No more Chinese schools, all closed up, no more associations, no Chinese medicine. We could no longer call ourselves Tionghoa, which is a pride way of saying overseas Chinese. Now it was China, a derogatory term like kike, nigger, spick, whoop, or chink. We were taught to hate ourselves and other Chinese. The Chinese, who had been there for many generations, most don't even speak Chinese. Neither do I. Become a constant target for extortion and legalized discrimination. In the fall of 1965, the river downtown turned red from the bloody massacre of alleged communists. Some say a million bodies. Like the Jews in Nazi Germany, racism against Chinese was institutionalized. So for many years, as a child, my classmates would generously pour blue ink over my white uniform, moisten my skin with spit, and insult my last name to sound like cockroach. And when mental abuse became boring, they resorted to physical abuse. My teachers would sometimes join in the fun. My academic standing dropped from top student to last in the class during the war. And my self-esteem was nil. So what's in the name? I could come to hate my name and all that it represents. Or I can be grateful for the opportunity to tell my story, which is not written in the history book due to censorship, every time I talk about my name. And tonight it's going to be broadcasted in 80 different countries. I felt that I could not tell my parents about the abuse I suffered at school. How could that interest my parents? My mom used to tell a joke and brag at the same time in front of guests that her husband doesn't care for kids. I guess it's considered manly. He never played with me. I did not feel loved. When I was 3, my parents left me for an overseas vacation for many months. They took many long vacations when I was a child, and I always feel abandoned. On top of that, my mom would threaten me that if I were naughty, she would leave me. Thus, I lived in fear. I felt lonely and depressed. As an adult, through the Dharma and meditation, I realized how resentfulness was causing me pain. Just the feeling of it, resentfulness, caused myself pain to myself. So So I learned to shift my view to positive thinking. I turned to gratitude. Grateful for my parents' support to find America that I love. Because without their money, I would never be able to be here. That's a fact. And that's the truth. And gratitude for carrying me and my family when we were sick. I forgave them and understand how they were raised. My grandfather was an orphan who perhaps didn't know how to be a father to my father. And my experience gave me the ability to have deep compassion for others and not to make the same mistake in being a father of my son. My wife's colleague told me the story of a woman who landed a great job with a prestigious firm in New York. And a week before she was to start, she broke her leg in a car accident. She was devastated that she couldn't start her new job. Just 1 week before that dream job. But her gratitude kicked in. She was due to be at the World Trade Center just before 9/11. I find it interesting that all phenomena can be viewed positively or negatively. It's the same phenomena. It's like a glass half full or half empty. Understanding a phenomena depends on what new information becomes available as time goes by. So it's a dynamic process. It's not static. I realized during meditation and at other times that often I can't control my thoughts nor when they want attention. I'll be planning, judging, replaying the past during meditation. And I also realized that many of my thoughts were formed under circumstances beyond my control. I didn't want to have this thought or that. It's just there. Out of control. My genetics rule me. The place I was born and raised. Or the people who helped me form my thoughts. And I can't censor my memory. It'll be there permanently until I become forgetful. Bless the aging process. Such is the nature of mind. Although I can't control many things, I have some control over how to react skillfully. My three options are negative thinking, neutral thinking, and positive thinking. The mind is pliable enough to be taught to view any phenomena in a positive way. The exercise to strengthen positive thinking is gratitude. Like pumping iron. Exercising gratitude will prepare me better for dealing with difficulties. It's actually quite easy to find gratitude. Just the fact that I have a healthy set of 10 fingers. I almost chopped this one. but I still have 10 instead of 9, can be gratifying. Or knowing that my body can sense pain, I can feel pain, that's good. It means my receptors are still working. Or that I can see the moon. Or knowing that I have roof on my head, clothing to wear, food to eat, good friends, hot shower, running water, a working toilet, or just fresh air to breathe. When I look at things with gratitude, a welling of joy emanates from deep in my heart. It's quite a wonderful feeling. Gratitude can transform my negative thinking to a positive state of mind. My body and my emotions feel better, healthier, healed. It is an antidote to suffering. I can skillfully create an environment conducive for positive thinking. This environment encompasses my body, mind, and external environment. When possible, I avoid stressful situations and associations. I maintain the health of my body and mind. A body that is healthy, calm, and well rested is a better environment for the mind. A compassionate and ethical mind will bring calmness to the body and the breath. Thus, my mind and body are affecting each other all the time. Waking or sleeping, it even affects my dream quality. Practicing meditation can bring calmness and clear seeing. This puts me in a situation where I can see things differently than when I have a busy mind. When I'm busy, I'm not aware of many things. I especially notice it when having a challenging conversation on the phone while driving. If my mind is busy, I am insensitive to others around me. I also experience impermanence during meditations, become aware of the cycle of arising and falling of all phenomena. Finally, my breath and body become sensitive and more aligned with my mind. Being skillful is not endowed at birth. Skills need to be developed, like cooking, skiing, or meditating. Every new skill to be acquired will require new effort. Although once a skill is mastered, then the practice is effortless. Intentions are important. For a misguided practice of positive thinking can be unproductive or even result in delusion. For example, a person who artificially sugarcoats life with positive thinking may falsely jump to a positive interpretation. I also noticed that practicing gratitude and positive thinking can be very difficult to do in the face of a difficult or traumatic experience. However, over time, the mind can be redirected to view the past phenomena positively with gratitude. In his book, The Art of Happiness, the Dalai Lama prescribes positive thinking as a path to happiness. I realize that to be happy, I have all the elements necessary right here, right now. I don't have to wait until I have more of this or that, or done more of those and accomplished that, or achieved something else. Don't need it. We have it all right here. Actually, Gil Fronsdal says, it doesn't take much to feel happy. Thank you for listening. I'd like to open the floor for any questions, so don't be shy.
Thank you. Thank you, Surjan.
Welcome, Eric.
Surge or Surya. I like calling you Surge. So you were talking about gratitude as being part of right view. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah. Yes.
Could you say a little more about that and how you see them fitting together? What is right view exactly?
Right. Stepping back a little bit, Eric, about the Eightfold Path, it talks about right living and right view. So right understanding is a form of right view. And there are many different ways to view or understand things. And certain kind of viewing, certain way of thinking and understanding could create suffering. What I think the Dalai Lama call it the second arrow. So if you get hurt by something, you got shot by the arrow, why shoot yourself with another one with another thought on top of it that actually causes you more suffering? Like my experience with racism and how I was brought up, I could put on top of that thought, oh, darn me, why me? Oh, those people are horrible. Does it help? So that is not right view. So you could understand the phenomena in a different way. Because that's the fact. You can look at every phenomena in one or that or this or those way. We could do that. Our mind can be pliable to say, all right, that's not healthy for me. That's not a right understanding of a phenomena. It's not the right view because it's not going to lead us to liberation. So, every Eightfold Path, which is totally related to the Four Noble Truths, the objective is always just one. To free ourselves from suffering. So when we do our living, speech, or viewing, understanding things, if we apply it the right way, that can help us to reach end of suffering. That's the right view.
Surjan, how do we say your name correctly?
It depends on how you view it. No, truly. My wife called me Surja because she's American and I introduced her that way. And I think people from India would look at it and say, that sounds like Surya. Is that means the sun? I would say yes. Or Suraj is another way. People call me Hank before. So whatever feels good to you.
I wanted to just thank you very much. This is one of the nicest talks.
Thank you.
My mom just recently died, but somehow I feel I bring her spirit back in by saying, she always used to say, it's a blessing in disguise. And it would be like a game. She had eight children, and and a sometimes testy husband, to whatever came up, to always try to look at the good side of it. And it's, it can be a fun game. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Surya, that was a great talk. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
The question I have is, could you elaborate a little bit more on the differences between positive thinking and positive interpretation?
Interpretation is a process of thinking. We would interpret things based on analysis, based on knowledge of what we know. So, when we understand or study a phenomena or analyze a phenomena, our thinking can direct us to interpret it in one way or another. So interpretation is the language of the mind that is used in thinking based on what is your intent. So if your intent is to feel angry or upset, then what we use your knowledge to interpret the phenomena in that way. Where opposed to, if your intent is to find liberation from your suffering, and you realize that when you think positively, your body feels good, your mind feels good, and when you think or interpret the phenomena, the same phenomena, in a negative way, then you feel contractions, you feel upset, or sometimes your blood pump in a different way. So the thought will work hand in hand with the knowledge base that we have in interpreting any phenomena. So knowing what our right view is, then our way of thinking can be directed to interpret a situation in a positive way for the purpose of liberating ourselves. So we'll be happy. I hope I answered your question.
I have a question regarding kind of the act of reinterpreting your past positively. In the sense that sometimes when phenomena or events occur that affect us negatively at that time, we carry that emotion linked to that event. And even though in my mind I can find positive factors of that event and ways I've grown and learned because of it, the act of remembering it still brings me pain because of the nature of the event itself. And sometimes it's very difficult to rationally overcome that pain by even understanding the many good things that came from that. And at the same time, some of these events are extremely hard to forget.
Impossible to forget, I must say, because it's there in our memory. Until we start losing it. But we know it's there. You cannot deny it, and we're not going to suppress it, because what for? We know it's there. And it's not an easy one. And in my personal experience, as hard as any difficult experience that I had, that in my case was very prolonged spirit of time. It's there. I know it's there. But it's interesting that by practice, and in the beginning it was hard, it required a lot of efforts. And over time, you get used to it. And then it's really interesting. Even the quality of my dream changes from nightmarish, violent, to meeting beautiful friends. And when someone says something nasty to you, you just, oh, I'm just going to let it go. So you're absolutely right. It's not an easy thing. It requires efforts and it requires skillfulness. The skillfulness requires effort to build. And it takes time. That's just nature. Like if you plant a flower, you wish it would bloom tomorrow. But it can't. That's just nature. So I can say from my personal experience, it can be done. And also from my personal experience, it is not easy in the beginning, but it does get easier. And if you put yourself in an environment that will be conducive to that, that will support us. If you, say, work in an environment that's very stressful, it's difficult. And if you have friends who hurt you, it's difficult. So, taking care of your environment outside, as well as your body, it's a dynamic that all shakes its hand together. And they are all interrelated and create a synergy in itself. It's not easy, but I can tell you, it can be done. And it's really freeing. You can actually, even though you know about this really long, difficult suffering, you know it's there. I experience it. I can write about it. It's still fresh in my memory. But my childhood memory. But my body don't feel that suffering when I talk about it. I don't. Because now I look at it in a positive way. How lucky I am I have had that experience. Because of that experience, I am able to feel deep suffering of someone else's. Deep compassion. I can feel a person's pain. Deeply. If I'm always happy, and then like the Buddha, he wants to know what unhappiness is about. He walked out of his palace. What's this old age and death and suffering? That's what he wants to know. So, lucky for those who already knows it. And it gives us knowledge. If someone do that to me, I don't like that, so don't do it to someone else. And meditation really helps. Because when the mind is calm, I don't know, you've been to a retreat before? If you go to a retreat, and you might want to give it a shot, it's really interesting. After the retreat, everything moves slow. And you can look at people, you can see the micro muscles, the blink of the eyes is slow. You can feel people's emotions, their hidden emotions. You can feel them. That's the way the mind is. So, for those who haven't had a retreat before, give it a shot. And then you can experience what it is like. I hope I answered your question.
Thank you. I enjoyed your talk very much.
Thank you.
If someone were to come to you in a state of high anxiety and great fear, it seems that in that moment it would be impossible for them to be grateful, especially if it's their first introduction to this practice. So would they simply need to have some distance, some time, and then to be able to look back and reflect and be able to look at that differently?
That's it. That's nature. It just takes time for that flower to bloom. Distance yourself. Take the time. And mold your thoughts slowly. When you're ready. When you're in state of anxiety, it's very difficult. So bring yourself first to calmness. Then you can see things clearly. Then you can work with the mind. I hope I answer your question.
Thank you.
Welcome. Since time is running out, I wish we have more time. I'd like to bring you into a short, maybe 5 minutes of gratitude meditation. And so what I'd like you to do is to think. So close your eyes. Well, what does it feel like when you feel gratitude? Have you ever feel gratitude? How does it feel in your mind, your heart, your body? What's the texture? Does it have color, taste? Bring yourself to that moment in your life when you feel deep gratitude. And in 2 minutes, I'm going to ring the bell. Please open your eyes slowly. And
if you could indulge me in just one last thing as a closing. I like we all to exhale in deep gratitude and join me saying, ah.
And we're going to say ah together in harmony. Thank you so much, everyone.